Hey, you guys, welcome back to Listen Bitch Presents Tell Me Why You Are Special. Today I've got Bart Merrill in the hot seat. Okay. This is, you guys, not the podcast where we pretend to be humble and we hide behind bullet points. This is not your LinkedIn energy. This is the tell us about your mess and your message in an arena. This is the arena. Bart got thrown into it. He knows we don't do the warm-up questions. We don't coddle, and we're not going to hide behind resumes. If you're sitting in the chair, you get to answer this one thing: why are you special? And today, I mean, Bart, he's been moving before most people even knew what momentum was. He's an international entrepreneur, author, speaker, creator of Monetize Your Mindset, and casually helped take the first commercial bungee jump to Japan, which tells me this isn't a man who theorizes about risk. He actually lives it. And he doesn't just talk about betting on himself. He jumps off towers holding the cord with his bare hands. Bart Merrill, hello, Bart. Tell me why you're special.
Man, I am special because I jumped off a bungee tower just hanging onto the cord with my bare hands. But
That'll do it.
that's just a joke. That's just funny.
No.
So I have never done the real job thing. I've never been an employee, and I like it that way. I don't know that I could do the real job.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen by on purpose. It happened on accident. My initial goal, my dream job was to get in the FBI and chase serial killers. That was what I wanted to do.
Interesting.
We had a FBI agent friend of the family who said the easiest way in was through accounting. And then once you get in, you don't have to stay in the white collar industry. As jobs open up, you apply to those jobs, and if you're good, you'll get them.
Wow.
And so that was my goal, my idea. Okay, I'm going to do accounting, get in, and then I'll go somewhere else and not focus on accounting. I did this and I found out really quick that I am not good at accounting and I don't like accounting. But I still, it was a means to an end, and that's what I did. As I got closer to graduation, I took a quarter off, went down and helped my dad on the pig farm. While I was down there, I had RK surgery done on my eyes to correct my vision.
Okay.
I got back up to school, was doing the application process for the FBI. I found out that that surgery automatically disqualified me.
Oh, man.
Now let's recap here really quick.
Yeah.
I don't like accounting. I'm not good at accounting. I'm about to graduate in accounting with the goal of getting in the FBI, and I know
Which you
I'm not
can't
going to
do.
do it.
Ah.
So I was devastated. I didn't know what I was going to
Yeah.
do. And a buddy of mine who worked for a bungee jump company in the town where my college was, they had sold a bungee jump to Japan. I had lived in Japan for a couple of years. And he jokingly asked me, "Would you like to go back to Japan?" I thought about it for a second and I said, "Yes." 3 months later, I was in Japan pushing, I mean, assisting little Japanese people off the top of an eight-story tower.
Amazing.
And that's how it started. And anything that crosses my path, good, bad, or ugly, I always ask the question, can I monetize it?
Yeah, that's a
And
great
that's what I've
question
done
to
my
be
whole
asking.
life.
Yeah, I mean, you were building ventures before most kids were worried about, acne or popularity. And I would say that's not normal. I love when people on the show could be relatable, but what do you think it is? You think you're wired different, or did something early in your life kind of force you to grow up faster and see opportunity where other people just kind of saw boredom?
So my dad was a pig farmer,
Yeah.
but he wasn't just a pig farmer. He had his hands in many different ventures that were in the agricultural space because that's what he loved.
Okay.
He was part owner in a dairy in Idaho, part owner in a mushroom warehouse in Utah, part owner in a produce warehouse in Arizona. And so I just watched him as I grew up and watching him and then having him assist me. My first venture was at age 15. I bought my first stereo at age 11. I love music. I love listening to music. And I bought this stereo. It was a $285 Sanyo all-in-one system. It was amazing. I was in my room. I would crank up the music. Mom and dad were going, "Oh no, what did we do?" But when I was that age, I found out it was a liability. because every time I'd go to town and I would have to buy the new tunes. And back then, you didn't just buy the tunes you liked. You had to buy the
At
whole
all.
CD or the whole cassette, or you had to buy the crap with the two songs that you wanted.
Yes.
And so for an 11-year-old kid, that was pretty spendy. When I turned 15, got my driver's license, I started a mobile disco business where I'd go and do dances. But here's the thing. In my podunk town in southern New Mexico, nobody was hiring 15-year-old DJs. There were no dances. And so I started doing a dance every weekend after a football game, a basketball game, or even when there was no game. I rented the community center myself, hired an off-duty cop for security. Mom and dad took money at the door. I spun records. Everybody had a good time.
It's amazing.
And so when I was doing these things, my dad was always there to encourage me, but I also got, he never set me down and taught me the birds and the bees of business. I just watched him and watched what he did. So when this happened, when my life got blown up, I just fell back on what he showed me. And so
Well,
that's why I'm wired different. And
yeah.
so when I kind of really realized it, I was doing a project where I was volunteering at a drug rehab center
Okay.
where I would teach them how to speak and tell their stories. I was listening to Jen tell her story, and she was talking about how she didn't know that her life was different than anybody else's until she went to college and had roommates.
Yeah.
Because when they were out and about, her family was relatively normal. When they went back is when the abuse and the neglect happened, and she thought everybody that was out and about went home to the same thing.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there thinking about, you know, it's the same when it comes to making money
Yeah.
and how to make money. If you didn't grow up with my dad or someone like my dad, you don't think like I do. I
Right.
need to share that with people. And that's when I wrote the book, Monetize Your Mindset. And when I started this journey of what I do now.
Yeah. Well, I want to hear about Japan. I want to talk about Japan, but also, you crashed your parents' car when you were 8. So we want you to dish the real story. Like, what did that teach you about risk and control and consequence? And did it create a pattern that you're still living today?
I don't know if it created a pattern, but it tells you what kind of a kid I was. So let's get the story at the beginning. I was playing hooky from school.
Okay.
I told mom and dad I was sick. I didn't feel good. And so I was curled up on the couch, and they had to go to town, which was 30 minutes away. So I got 30 minutes for them to get there, 30 minutes for them to get back. And let's just say 30 minutes that for them to go around in town. And so I'm by myself. The keys to the car were on the refrigerator, hanging on a little hook. Dad had been letting me drive while I was sitting on his lap where I could use drive the truck, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, this is the perfect time for me to go practice. Dad would be so proud if I got better. I backed out of the garage, and as I'm backing out, someone drives by on the road, and I'm going, oh crap, someone just saw me. And so I got nervous, and I'm just starting to pull the car back in. And this is in 1970, what would it be? Probably around 1976-ish.
Yeah, so it's
And
quite
this was
a
an
standard.
old, this was an old Ford LTD. I mean, the hood went on forever.
Right.
And so I'm sitting on the edge of the seat, looking over the hood. My feet can barely touch the pedals. I have my foot on the brake as I'm going into the garage, and it started to go a little bit faster than I liked. And so I'm like, oh, I got to hit the brake. I raised my foot off the brake and slammed it on the gas.
Oh,
And
no.
boom, right into the garage, into the end of the garage. I got out of the car. You know, the car was okay. The car's a beast. I mean, those
Yeah.
cars back then were just, they were built tough. But the cabinets at the end of the garage were destroyed.
Wow.
And so that's how I wrecked the car at age 8. I also lied about it when they finally found out that someone had damaged the cabinets. They couldn't tell them. They couldn't tell on the car, but they could see that the car hit the cabinets.
Yeah.
I tried to blame it on my sister. And dad, he was really good at interrogation. And after about a day, he broke me. And so I had to work hoeing weeds in the fields for 50 cents an hour until I paid for the cabinets.
Wow.
So that's the story on that.
Yeah, I think that took a little time, but it does speak to a lot of your character because, I mean, jumping, holding a cord in your hands, like, I don't know if that's bravery, ego, obsession, proving something. I have no idea. Was it a calculated move? Like, what part of you needed to be the guy who did that? And I mean, a commercial bungee operation. Like, that's not just a fun little side hustle. You went through infrastructure, culture, language, liability. Was there a point where you ever were like, this is going to blow up in my face?
I probably didn't think that far. I was probably 26, 27. So I should have known better, but I didn't. And so how it all went down is in this on this system, there is a stuntman airbag at the bottom of the tower.
Okay.
And in reality, in theory, I'd never seen it, but I'd heard people have done it. You could jump off the tower without a bungee cord, hit the air mat, and be okay.
Okay.
So my brilliant mind asked me as I'm sitting at the top of this tower, kind of bored because we didn't have customers at the time. And
Okay.
I just kind of said, okay, my brilliant mind says, can you do that? And I walked over to the edge and I looked down and I said, no, I'm not that stupid. But then the brilliant mind continued. And so as we attach a bungee cord to our customer, we have this nylon strap. It's about a foot long and it has a carabiner on it. You can hook it around to each other and I can create a loop. And if I put two loops at the bottom of the bungee cord, I have
Handles.
handles. And so I could jump, wait for the bouncing to stop, and then just let go. And that way I'm falling from eight or from six stories instead of eight. And in my head, I could do that.
Right.
Now, people are saying, okay, that's stupid. What if you can't hang on?
Yeah.
You're right, that is stupid. And I mean, my dad probably rolls in his grave every time I tell a story.
Yeah.
But let's talk about it when it comes to life and business. You have to be willing to take risk.
Yep.
And this was a risk, but it was calculated. Because I had bungee jumped 1,000 times or more.
Yeah.
I knew the pressure. I knew what it was going to be like, and I was pretty sure, like probably 99% sure, that I could hang on.
Yeah.
And so it was a calculated risk. And when you're going into something, into business, you shouldn't take stupid risk, but you need to take risk and you need to do your homework so that it's a calculated risk.
And it should
And
be a
so
risk that other people think is stupid. You know?
many times it is.
Yeah. I
And
love
so
that.
that's the story behind the bungee jump thing. And it was one of the most terrifying things I've done.
Yeah. But then, like, what else could ever scare you again? If you do the scariest thing in your world in that moment, like, there's nothing you could ever not do again. And that'd be pretty scary to me. So then everything just kind of on a scale doesn't look so scary, you know? It
Yeah.
changes perspective for a lot of things, I would imagine.
And so, do you know that I'm a below the knee amputee?
I did not know that. I know you have Beyond Limbs and you have Side Hustle Samurai, and those seem like very wildly different worlds. So I was going to ask about the common thread, but absolutely, let's talk about that.
So we're talking about terrifying things.
Yeah.
And as terrifying as you think jumping off a bungee tower is, just hanging on with your hands,
Yeah.
I walked through the hospital doors to get my leg cut off. That is the most terrifying thing I've ever done.
Like you knew they were going to have to cut it off. What happened to your
Yes.
leg?
So I tell people I didn't listen to my wife.
Okay.
And so I had purchased a trip to Canada. It was a personal development trip. And about a month before I was supposed to leave, my wife comes out of her office. She's Japanese, big into feng shui. She came out of her office and she says, you can't go. I'm like, I can't go where? You can't go to Canada. It's a bad direction.
Ooh.
I can't live my life on your feng shui.
Yeah.
And she protested a second and went back in, and then she came back out a few minutes later. No, this is a horrible direction. This could affect you for the rest of your life.
Right.
Well, obviously, I went to Canada. The last day I was there, they were doing a ropes course. And I was dropped from the ropes course from about 25 feet in the air, landed on my ankle.
Oh.
And the next day, I had two bus rides and a plane ride home with two suitcases. And all they had at the camp was crutches for someone 5'10. I'm 6'4. And by the time I got back home, I was swollen clear to my knee and running 102 degree fever.
Oh my gosh.
Went to the doctor the next day, got an x-ray. They told me it wasn't broken. Well, when a doctor says it's not broken, you listen and you say, okay, it's not broken, just a
Right.
bad sprain. 9 years later, I found out that it was crushed on the back and the front.
Wow.
And that basically they said, well, whenever you get in enough pain, you're going to want to get it fused.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. Well, I'm a tough cowboy from southern New Mexico. When it got enough pain, I went to get it fused or set up a fusion appointment. The radiologist, he takes the picture of my ankle, and they're not supposed to say anything. You
Right.
know, they're it's
Yeah.
against the rules for them to say anything to me.
Yeah.
From behind the partition where he's pushing the buttons, he yelled out, "Damn,
Oh
you don't have an ankle bone."
my
And I'm just like, oh gosh, this isn't good. This is not going to be good.
Right.
When in the doctor's office, he confirmed that I have no ankle bone
Wow.
and that the only option was fusion or was amputation. Sorry.
Yeah.
And so I basically, long story short, it was 6 months from when I got this diagnosis to when I had the surgery. I walked in on my own 2 feet, knowing that I wasn't going to walk out. And the for someone to understand it, I kind of equate it to dead man walking in the prison,
Yeah.
where they're walking to the death chamber. Now, I'm not going to die, but a piece of me
A
is.
piece of you is life will, you're a new person. You come out of that like that.
And it was terrifying. I didn't know if I could do it, to be honest.
Yeah.
And in my head, I'm just yelling. In my head, I'm like, okay, peg leg walking.
Yeah.
Peg leg walking. But here's the way I think when it comes to business and what I do. I just found out that I'm going to have my leg chopped off.
Yeah.
After the shock and awe was over, I say to myself, okay, I don't like this. There's nothing I can do about it. It's going to happen.
Right.
So how can I monetize it?
Ooh.
6 months post-op, I contracted with my prosthetist to help people who are going to have to go through or are going through what it is I went through.
Yeah.
If I hadn't thought that before, because he didn't ask me,
Right.
we were sitting in an appointment, my appointment, working on my leg. And I said, Scott, I interviewed three other prosthetists before I decided on you.
Yeah.
One of them had a guy that with an amputation that I could talk to, that I could ask the questions, how bad is this going to hurt?
Right.
What about phantom pain? What about this? How long will I be back till I'll be back to work? Scott, you don't have a guy. I'm your guy.
Yeah.
And that started the conversation. And if I hadn't thought about it before, when that opportunity came up, I wouldn't have said anything.
Right.
But in my head, it was already planted. The seed was planted. And when the opportunity came, I jumped at the chance and I said, Scott, I don't want a job. I don't want to come into your office.
Yeah.
I want to be on retainer. You send me the numbers of the people I need to talk to. I do it and you pay me. And so that's what we've been doing for what is it now? Almost a year and a half since we
That's amazing.
started doing that.
Yeah. Or I just have to ask you, when your leg got amputated, did your wife take it and beat you with it for not listening to her? Because I feel like that is a missed opportunity if she did not do that.
So, like I said, she's Japanese and she did not know the phrase I told you so.
Okay.
So the initial fall happened in 2012.
Right.
When I found out this was going to get amputated, I came home to her. I says, honey, I got to tell you a secret that I haven't been telling you for a long time now.
Yeah.
She's like, what? There's a phrase in English that is, I told you so.
Yes.
And I told her how to use it. She's like, "Oh, I just heard that on English class on TV last week." I was like, "Well, now you know how to use it."
Right.
No, she did. She was very nice and did not beat me with it, but and I still don't know that I listen to her feng shui as often as I should, but
So still no
that's
lessons
pretty, it's pretty
learned, which is
scary.
good. At least she knows that you have the mindset of how can I monetize this? So she will know forever that you will make anything in life benefit financially. So that's incredible.
Yeah, that's just, like I said, anything good, bad, or ugly, I always ask the question, can I monetize it?
When you, I mean, building something like Beyond Limbs, like this requires like vulnerability, right? It's not just grabbing some straps and jumping off a cliff. It's a different level of vulnerability. And I think a lot of people in the entrepreneurial world avoid that. Was there even a moment that you didn't want to go public with your side of the story, or was it just straight you knew you were going to talk about it?
So I knew I was going to talk about it because even before it happened, like I said, 6 months of dealing with the thoughts and wondering, going down the YouTube rabbit hole, trying to figure things out because I had questions. But I went through it quite well. I expected the best, and the best happened. So it was originally, I was scheduled to have it happen in November of 2023. And I just got to thinking, why screw up the holidays by chopping off body parts?
Right, that's fair.
So why not wait till after the first of the year? And so that's what I did. And the doctor just said, be careful. And I was already in a walking boot for that leg. He said, if you go without the walking boot, or if you put too much pressure, your bone could snap. And then we're doing not an elective surgery, we're doing an emergency amputation. You would rather have it elective. But so I postponed it to January. And then my wife had to have quadruple bypass at the beginning of January. And so if I had cut it off in November, we wouldn't have been paying attention to her. We may not have found her issues. She could have died taking care of me. And so I felt like I was guided, divinely guided, if you want to call that, by the decisions that I made. Then I moved it to February because I had to take care of my wife now. And then in February, it was February 29th, and I went to the surgeon who I'd originally had planned to take care of it, and they wanted me, so they were shutting down their thing and moving to a different location. So they were only allowing one night stays. So they wanted to chop off my leg and send me home the next day. And I just like, I'm a tough cowboy, but I'm not that
Not
tough.
enough.
And so now I canceled him. I went to another doctor, and it was ended up happening March 25th. And it came out perfectly the way I wanted it, meaning I wanted to go to an acute rehab center where they work with you 3 times a day. And it was in the same hospital that I had my limb amputated. And so the transition was just super smooth. And everything just went perfectly. And I expected it to go perfectly. And so it just, I don't know. I don't know why I got off on this, but that's how I expected things. And I don't mind sharing. I mean, I would go to church, and this true story, this lady comes up to me, "Oh, I'm so sorry that you're going to have your leg amputated. So after the amputation, are you going to get a prosthetic?" I kid you not. I held a straight face. I looked her in the eye and said, "No, I'm just going to scoot around on my butt for the rest of my life."
I love it.
I mean, it's just, and people would often ask me, "How are you going through it so well?" And I think you alluded to it earlier about how going through things, I think in your intro, you allude to going through things make you who you are and help you get through other things. Jumping off the bungee tower, hanging on with just my hands, helped me walk through the doors of that hospital that morning. So just taking it a little bit at one step at a time and getting to different levels. Growing up with the name Bart, that wasn't easy because in grade school it was Bart the Fart, you
Bart the
know?
fart. I wouldn't even,
Yeah.
my brain wouldn't even have thought of that right now.
Well, that's what, and I'm not advocating
Yeah,
bullying,
right.
but the experiences doing, I mean, I fought a lot in high school because it got even worse in high school.
Yeah.
And when I, thank goodness when I became the DJ, then I became not Bart the Fart, but I came Music Man or whatever they would call me, that was completely different. But those experiences growing up made me who I am today
Yeah.
and helped me deal with the different things, whether it's my dream job getting blown up.
Right.
In you're going to have failures in business if you go into business. You're not going to hit the home run every time.
Right.
Help me go through these different failures that may have happened. And right after 9/11, I lost a lot of money in business.
Yeah.
And it helped me to maneuver that with a decent outcome, decent attitude, you know.
Right.
And so going through bad stuff is good to create who you are, if you have the support team to help you get through it,
Yeah.
to where you're bending and not breaking.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. We're coming up on the end here, so I'm going to ask you a final question, and I want you, after you answer the question, obviously let us know where people can get resourced and find you. Show notes, check the show notes for the links, okay? But someone listening right now is sitting on something, an idea, a story, a skill, a scar, and they have convinced themselves that it's too small, it's too weird, it's too late. What do you say to that person?
As you can hear through what we've talked about, that I've monetized different things that you may think are too small. I mean, who would have thought I could have monetized getting my leg cut off? Now, don't go and get your leg cut off to start a side hustle.
Yeah.
But there is, in this world today, with AI and the resources we have, it's the easiest time in the history of the world to start a side hustle or a side business that could become your main hustle if you wanted it to be. Start with the small thing and get that small wind, and it could snowball into bigger things. So with my leg thing, I just want to, it's a small thing. I mean, it's a good chunk of change that I make
Yeah.
helping people, but it's grown into other ideas that have come up. So my just a quick, this is my leg, has the Side Hustle Samurai on it. It's tax deductible. This I cannot change.
Yeah.
What if I make something that is interchangeable, that I could change this depending on what I want to feel or what
Right.
I want it to be?
Yeah.
Okay, so something that, talking with my prosthetist, we are working on.
That's amazing.
There's a couple of other apps for a prosthetist that we are, computer apps,
Yeah.
all stemming from one small thing about helping other people.
Yeah.
So even if it's small, once you get into the world of whatever it is you're doing, other things may open up.
Right.
And can I say one quick story? Do we
Yeah.
have time?
Yeah.
So have you heard the story Acres of Diamonds?
No.
So it's about a farmer, a Persian farmer. His name was Ali Afed. He sold his farm, went in search of diamonds. He died broke alone in a foreign land. He never found his riches. The farmer that bought his farm was watering his camel in the brook that ran through the property, and he saw this shimmering rock in the little strange in the brook. He reaches down and picks it up, and it was a diamond. He discovered diamonds, acres of diamonds, in what was Ali Afed's backyard.
Wow.
My family, we have a similar story. Instead of acres of diamonds, we call it acres of pig poop. I said, my dad was a pig farmer. There were more pigs than people in my town.
Yeah.
On our farm, at any one time, we had 18, 19,000 pigs. And that's a lot of pigs. We had about 2,000 sows. Do you know what a sow is? It's a mama pig, for those who don't know. And a mama pig can give birth 2.5 times a year, and we average 9.97 pigs per litter.
Wow.
So if you do the math, that equals a lot of pig poop.
A lot of pig poop.
We had these three man-made ponds that we called the lagoons that we would, it was a sewage pond, a settling pond. Go here one year, then here the next year, and then here the next year. Now, when Dad got into his mid-60s, he decided it was time to shut down the pig operation and go in search of his next big thing, his next opportunity, his next acres of diamonds. He died at age 81. He never found his next big thing. 2 years later, we sold the farm for $235,000, which was a fair price for the property at the time. The new owners, they were leveling those man-made ponds. They'd been dry on top for years. But as the heavy grader was going across one of those ponds, it broke through the crust and sunk up to its belly in this liquid black muck.
Wow.
They called in experts. The experts came and analyzed the stuff, and right there on the spot, they offered the new owners of our farm $2,000 a ton for the stuff. That's $1 a pound for old pig poop. Acres of diamonds right under my dad's nose. The farm that we sold for $235,000 was now worth over $1 million. And so what I want to ask you, what I want to ask your audience is, what about you? Where are your acres of diamonds? Are you right on the verge of discovery? Or are you overlooking them like Alia Fed and my dad? Because there could be right in your backyard, right within your grass, right there under your nose. And as you saw in my story, they could look like a pile of pig poop. So don't overlook the things that are right there. Don't underthink or don't overthink. Oh, this isn't big enough. Oh, I can't monetize this. Just ask the question and allow your mind to start thinking, okay, how can I monetize it? And even if your mind says, you can't monetize it, this is not mine. This is from a speaker, Mike Rayburn. And he says, when your mind says, no, you can't do that, say, okay, yeah, I know I can't, but if I could, where would I start? And that's going to allow your mind to start thinking. And that's what I want to leave you with, leave your listeners with.
That's amazing. Well, Bart, here is what I see. You didn't build credibility because life was easy. You built it because you were willing to move when it wasn't. You didn't at any point in time wait to be ready. You didn't wait to be fully healed. You didn't wait to be fully certain. You jumped. You walked down the hall. And those are the things that I want everyone listening to tattoo on their brains. The thing you think disqualifies you is usually the thing that qualifies you. And I promise you are closer to the pig poop than you think. It's just a matter of keep going, keep asking the right questions. The scar, the weird wiring, maybe the moment you crash the metaphorical car, that's all leverage. Stop waiting to feel special. You become special when you decide to move. So find Bart, get monetize your mindset, watch Beyond Limbs, watch Side Hustle Samurai, study someone who didn't just theorize about risk, he embodied it. And if he can jump off a tower holding the cord, if he can walk into a hospital knowing he's losing a limb, babe, you can hit publish. You can post the thing. You can build the thing. You can share your story. Bart, I thank you so much. This has been a complete pleasure and an honor. And for my listeners, I will see you guys in the arena.
Thank you.